This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There may be nothing more disruptive to a family than having a child with anxiety. One of the most difficult things about this is that sometimes nobody in the family even realizes that it is anxiety they're dealing with. I talked with child psychiatrist Dr. Elise Faluco in the last episode about what anxiety can look like in kids. As I've said before, I have never met a kid who says, "Hey, Dr. Hunter," or, "Hey, Mom, I've got anxiety. Can you help me?" Nope. Instead, they have meltdowns or other difficult behaviors. They might have chronic stomach aches or headaches. They could be extremely picky eaters or refuse to sleep on their own. This can be a really hidden problem. Once you have figured out that your child has anxiety, you can treat it, and the treatments are really successful. They just take a lot of time. It's worth the effort of treating anxiety when kids are young. How do you treat anxiety in kids? That's next. I'm Dr. Wendy Hunter, and I'm the pediatrician next door. I'm that doctor friend you call for practical advice about your kids' health. I mix the science of medicine with the reality of parenting. Some of the best ideas I've gotten about how to treat kids with anxiety, I learned on Dr. Elise Faluco's podcast called Psyched for Peds. Dr. Faluco is a child psychiatrist in Norfolk, Virginia, and she hosts the Psyched for Peds podcast for pediatricians and other clinicians to learn about behavioral and mental health in kids. In one of her early episodes, she shares breathing techniques that you can do with a child when they need to calm down. The first thing to try to treat a child with anxiety is to teach them calm down techniques. They may need more formal treatment, of course, but this is still a good place to start. One of her guests shared that she likes to have kids blow bubbles with a bubble wand to help them calm down. You have to challenge the child to blow the biggest bubble they can because this makes them blow slower to make the bubble get bigger without popping. She and psychologist Peggy Greco explain several other easy, practical techniques in their episode called Calm Down. And that is worth listening to if you think these kinds of exercises would be helpful in your house. I recommend having pinwheels around the house because they aren't as messy and they can still make your child take breathing moments and pauses. We know breathwork helps to calm the nervous system, and it's an easy technique for any age to use when they're feeling anxious. Here, Dr. Faluco shared her favorite technique with me and a few other treatments for anxiety.
One of the things that we teach our littler kids is something called cookie breathing, and I just love desserts, so I'm going to tell you about this one, but you can have the child visualize that they're holding something like a chocolate chip cookie in their hand. And what you do is you have them take a deep breath in through their nose and smell and imagine, what does that cookie taste like? And then, you know, while they're imagining that in their brain, then you have them blow out through their mouth and cool down the cookie, because the cookie's really hot and it just came out of the oven. And so what you're doing is visualization. You have them repeat that process a couple times, and you're also having them do deep, slow breathing, which is a way to trigger your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your calming, which was basically calms your body down. So deep breathing exercises, any sort of relaxation is helpful when they're feeling that way. The second thing that I always tell families to do is to kind of be aware of, try not to inadvertently reinforce their anxiety. So as a parent, if your child is scared of something, like say sleeping alone, let's use that example. This one's near and dear to my heart because we have that in our own family. But let's say your kid is a little bit scared to go to bed on their own. And so as a parent, in some ways, the easy thing to do is to crawl in bed with them and fall asleep. And no judgment, because I definitely have done that. But when that happens, so immediately that takes away their anxiety for the moment because you're sleeping with them. But what that's really doing is that's not giving them the opportunity to experience what it feels like to calm down on their own. They're dependent upon you as a prop to be the person that's regulating their nervous system. And every time you go to bed with them, not only are you depriving them of the opportunity to learn how to calm down themselves, you're reinforcing this idea that, yeah, going to bed on your own is super scary. Let's just not do that. And then it continues to become really scary. We call these avoidance behaviors or avoidant behaviors, or avoidant coping is maybe a better way to say that. But as a parent, you have to be really careful that you're not accommodating to the child's anxiety. So normally when they're anxious, they're going to want to avoid something. And as a parent, you don't want them to be distressed. And so it's real easy to fall in there and try to help them avoid that situation, but it makes anxiety worse. And so, you know, trying to help them and coach them through the situation while helping them with relaxation strategies can often be a good idea.
There are a lot of ways to help your child learn techniques to calm down. We talked about a few already, but one resource I like to recommend is called Coping Cat Parents. They have an online cognitive behavioral therapy program, and it's called Camp Cope A Lot. And they also have a program for parents to learn how to help their child who has anxiety. I recommend these programs because it can be hard to find a therapist in a lot of areas of this country. But even if you're in a city, it's still not easy to schedule with a therapist. We do know that parenting strategies at home can be helpful in dealing with anxiety. And we know that organized, prescribed treatments are also very helpful. I asked Dr. Faluco, what is the role of therapy and medications in treating anxiety disorders?
We have really good studies out there and randomized controlled trials, which are, you know, the gold standard in all of our field of medicine, to look at which is better for kids. Is it therapy alone? Is it medication alone for anxiety? Is it combining both? And then more importantly, when do you make the choice? You know, at what point do you consider these various options? So stepping back, I would say if you have any sort of anxiety and, you know, the parents have tried measures at home to promote relaxation and to avoid avoidance, and the kid is still struggling with physical symptoms or is very stressed out and not feeling well, and it, you know, may begin to be impacting their life at school, their life at home, the family's life, this is for sure when you need to consider some form of treatment, and of therapy would be a great start. So we know there's an evidence-based therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy that is great for kids with anxiety. There is also a role for medication treatment for anxiety. And really, the best option is to combine treatment of medication and cognitive behavioral therapy together. So what we know is, I'm going to throw out a couple of numbers here that may be boring, but I think they're helpful, that if you send a child to therapy for cognitive behavioral therapy, even in the best case scenario with the best trained evidence-based therapists, there's only really a 50% chance that they're going to have a response at 12 weeks. Therapy can be very helpful, but therapy alone is not always the best option, kind of depending upon the child. What we know is that combination treatment of therapy plus medication will give you about an 80% response rate at 12 weeks. So if it's my child and they have anxiety that's affecting their life, I would really push for combination of cognitive behavioral therapy with medication to help alleviate their symptoms of anxiety.
Do you have to stay on medication forever, or is it just a short period of time?
So the medications work different than our, you know, our typical antibiotic medications for ear infections that most families are probably most familiar with. The medications don't work immediately. We're creating some form of change in our brain through treatment of anxiety, which is a neurologic or brain issue. And so it takes about 4 to 6 weeks of starting and medication for anxiety, specifically the antidepressant or anti-anxiety medicines, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. It takes 4 to 6 weeks of taking them regularly to see a maximum response. And then once, you know, you may have to do a little bit of dose adjustment to find the right dose for your child or teenager. And then once you get there, we usually like to keep them on that medicine for about 9 to 12 months. And then at that point, decide, you know, does it make sense to come off of the medicine? Do we feel like we've done a good job tackling anxiety? Has the child or teenager learned a ton of skills through cognitive behavioral therapy? I hope so, that they'll be able to use moving forward. And if that's the case, you know, coming off at 9 to 12 months makes a lot of sense.
I use the same class of medications. I use them often in kids with anxiety, and I have seen that they're life-changing, and I really have not seen a lot of side effects, but parents are so fearful of starting them. What do you tell parents who are afraid of these medications?
Yeah, I don't know what we did, or, you know, I can guess what happened to make parents scared of these medicines. I think there's so much stigma around mental health problems, even though they're so common. You know, something like one in 10 kids has some struggles with some type of anxiety disorder, and medication can be incredibly effective for it. So what I say when we're starting these medications for anxiety is that typically they are very well tolerated. In the first couple of days as you start a medicine, your body and brain are getting adjusted to it. So you may feel a little sleepy or not sleepy at all. You may have a little bit of stomach upset, but honestly, the majority of kids who take these medicines don't really notice anything at all. But I say, you know, give it a couple of days for your body to get used to it. Call me, of course, if there's any problems or major issues. But these medications are very safe and well tolerated. There's a small percentage of the population that will feel worse on these meds. And I think this is what parents are afraid of. Like, you know, my child is already not doing well. We're at the point where we're talking about prescribing medication or taking medication for anxiety. Obviously, you know, it's a little bit of a crisis situation. And so there's this fear and real anxiety on the part of the parents that they don't want to make things worse. So I warn the child, the teenager, the parent, yes, there is a chance that this may make you feel worse. Some people will feel more grouchy, more irritable, more edgy. Usually it's very obvious and you can tell within the first couple of days after starting the medicine or after increasing the dose. And if that happens, you just stop it, call me, and, you know, we'll figure out what to do next. It's as soon as you stop the medicine or shortly thereafter, those symptoms will resolve. And then I try to put it in perspective by saying, look, a small percentage of the population will feel worse, but really something like, you know, if we're doing this with therapy, 80% of the people who are taking this medicine in conjunction with therapy will feel better. So that's something that the family has to weigh and make a decision about.
It's been interesting among the patients I've treated. I've found that the only people who feel worse tend to be the ones whose anxiety is caused by some kind of past trauma. I find those are the non-responders, but I see far fewer patients than you do with these disorders.
I think you're picking up on something very real there. And how I would interpret that is that kids who have experienced trauma, their anxiety is so much higher quantitatively and just qualitatively than kids without trauma. And because their nervous system is already hypervigilant, hyperactivated, anything, any change that they experience, they're going to have kind of a more dramatic and extreme reaction to it. So starting a medicine, they're going to be much more sensitive to side effects.
That's interesting. What age do you think that therapy actually will work at? Like, how young can you go?
Depends on the kind of therapy. So we have a lot of really cool evidence-based therapies for preschoolers that can be used for preschoolers with anxiety. Now, I'll tell you that therapy, that's not cognitive behavioral therapy. That's a different kind of parent-child interaction therapy. So it's working with the parent and the child and helping them to help coach the child on calming themselves down and regulating their emotions. But it can work, you know, in preschool age kids. The cognitive behavioral therapy is really helpful for kids, I would say, you know, 6 or 7 and up for sure. Yeah, it varies on where you are developmentally.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Parent-Child Interaction Therapy, also called PCIT, can be found by searching the psychologytoday.com website. They have a Find a Therapist listing, and you can sort by type of therapy. You can use the same search to find trauma-based therapists or cognitive behavioral therapy. If you aren't making any progress in finding a therapist or even in getting a diagnosis, ask your pediatrician for resources. But it might also be time to consider starting a medication, and I know that can be scary. One way you can think about it is this. Do you know someone with diabetes or thyroid disease? They have to take medication, either insulin or thyroid hormone, to replace something they're deficient in. Why do you think anxiety is found in families? Because there's a chemical basis for anxiety, and sometimes you need to take a medication to replace the chemical that you're deficient in while you're learning skills to manage your anxiety. Then you can go off the medicine. Finding someone to prescribe medication? Now that's a whole other can of worms.
There is a national shortage of child psychiatrists. There's something like almost all 50 states, there is a severe national shortage such that there are fewer than 18 child psychiatrists for every 100,000 kids under the age of 18.
Wow.
Yeah, wherever you're living in the United States, unless you happen to be in, I think, metropolitan Boston is an exception to this rule. And there are like little hot spots around the country where there's a high concentration of child psychiatrists. But typically, it's going to be very hard to find a child psychiatrist that will accept your insurance, that has openings, and is taking new patients. Part of what I do through the podcast and through my regular work is working to try to support pediatricians like you and parents also, like you're doing, to try to be able to be empowered and recognize early signs. And then for the pediatricians, I try to work to support them in feeling comfortable treating anxiety with medication when it's indicated.
The most important thing to keep in mind is that it can take a lot of work and advocacy on your part to make a lot of phone calls or literally begging a therapist, psychologist, or psychiatrist to help your child. But here's the thing, it's worth it. Your child can see you're trying to help them, and eventually you will find help and treatments that work really well. Be persistent. Okay, what about the really tough cases? Sometimes behaviors and mood symptoms can get so bad that a child needs more intensive therapy. And there are options for that as well. There are programs that offer something called IOP, or intensive outpatient treatment. These can be several hours a day for 3 or 4 days a week, or even every day. And there are residential centers. This might be something to consider. You may know a friend who's going to go through this, and so that's why I want to tell you about this option as well, in case you or someone you know doesn't know where else to turn. There are treatment centers located across the country, and I wanted to know the details on how to choose a good program. So I talked to Dr. Charles Warder. He's a clinical psychologist who has just co-founded Protected Roots Integrative Treatment Center in San Diego. I think families know how to consider things like the cost of these programs and the location, as well as which diagnoses the program treats. Dr. Warder has spent the last few years building this treatment center. So I asked him what parents should look for in a residential treatment center.
Whether a program like mine or any other program, the first thing that I would invite caregivers to look at is Joint Commission Accreditation and DHCS. I've learned to really appreciate JCO because, and JCO stands for Joint Commission Accreditation, it creates safety. So you have these processes that are based on evidence-based measures, ethics, to make sure that the interventions are useful and if we're a good fit for this kid, right? A lot of sites out there will say, no, we're open doors, we accept everything and anything. And that would be a big red flag for me because it's important to say, hey, you know, this may not be the best fit for you. These are the kind of kiddos that we work best with. This is what we can actually service. And these are the communities or the people that you really should be speaking to if you're struggling with this. So JCO has given us a beautiful framework to enhance safety, which I have been appreciative of in terms of building this thing. A lot of what we do, even before we do a pre-admissions call or an intake at Evans Square, we kind of inform them a little bit of what this site is in terms of outpatient services or an IOP. And that stands for intensive outpatient program, typically 3 times a week for 3 hours when the acuity is a little higher. We say, you know, we're aligned with academic institutions. We're aligned with academic medicine. My background is working in academic medicine, period. So I've learned to really appreciate that and understand that that level of rigor should be offered to everyone.
That's really interesting because you listed things that are not on people's radar when they're looking for a program. Probably primarily they're looking at, well, how much is this going to cost me and is it on my insurance panel and location and will you just take my kid off my hands?
Right.
Right.
And that creates so much problems later on too.
How do parents find programs? Are there databases? Like where would you start?
Local SEO and local Google search is good. Another one is through your insurance network too. They have portals for each of your providers. Obviously, we all know this, right? So through your own portal, reach out to pediatricians, reach out to your local, you know, psychiatrist. If you've gone through an emergency department, be like, hey, what would you recommend? And the psychiatrist who gets the same question over and over again can list the names that would be best suited for the kiddo, right? So don't be shy to ask is what I'm trying to say. Sometimes caregivers, what they do is they put it on their own shoulders and like, I'll figure this out. And I don't need to ask an expert. This kid needs this. And, you know, the experts are there for a reason. And they usually have a lot of information on how to help you.
If you're a parent and you aren't sure what level of support your child needs, can they call a program and just talk it through?
Absolutely. Usually each program has a point person that they can call and say, hey, you know, this is something that I'm struggling with. What do you think? I mean, that's what we do here at PRI. There's calls coming on all the times. And I'll even personally answer those calls or there'll be another clinician on staff answering those calls as well too. There's information on that. And the problem is like there is a mental health crisis in this country. There's not enough providers. There's not enough access to care in terms of the insurance piece I was saying.
Every time my son is like actually in the living room sitting down, I feel like I'm winning. I'm like, oh, he's comfortable here. I'm like, okay, we're still good. Yeah. He showed up in the living room. You know.
That's so funny.
How do you know your child is doing fine? They have good friends. They have something they like to do. They're pretty good in school and they still talk to you. That's about all they need to do. If they aren't doing okay, follow your intuition and trust it. If you think your child might have an anxiety disorder, check with your insurance company to see what resources they can provide. You don't need a referral from your doctor to access mental health services. You should still ask your pediatrician for help navigating this process, and it's also fine to search the internet for help too. Thank you to child psychiatrist Dr. Elise Faluco from the Psyched for Peds podcast and psychologist Dr. Charles Warder for giving us just a little insight into how and when to find treatment for a child with anxiety. Check out Dr. Faluco's podcast. It's Psyched for Peds, PSYCHED, number 4, PEDS. If you have questions about your child's health and you're not sure where else to turn, send me a note and we can answer your question on the show. For more from the Pediatrician Next Door, find me on the web at pediatriciannextdoorpodcast.com. If you've got a question about the weird things kids do, send an email to hello@pediatriciannextdoorpodcast.com for a chance to hear your voice on the show. I'm Dr. Wendy Hunter, and I'm the Pediatrician Next Door. This show is produced by Red Rock Music. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever it is you're listening. I'll be back next time with more.